Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed, and sadly, Marek Larwood cannot be with us this week.
He's not died.
The internet
thinks he's died.
Something even less likely has happened. He's been gainfully employed, which is exciting. So joining me as a blast from the past for Absolute Radio Film Fandango listeners is Daniel Ward.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good. Have you been enjoying films lately?
No, I've been enjoying the entertainment package of Now TV. So I've been
Who sponsor you, I believe?
Yeah, who sponsors me? So I've watched loads of telly.
Oh.
Films are dead, mate.
Oh no.
Films are over.
No, we don't. Here on Film Fandango, we don't hold that.
No one cares about films anymore. It's all about telly.
We're like Top Gear here. We absolutely must destroy the electric car, otherwise our careers are over. So they're over anyway, aren't they? It's a dated reference.
Yeah.
I've been to the cinema this week. I went to see Sicario. Have you seen the trailer, heard about this film?
Looks really fun.
It does look really fun, doesn't it?
See, Emily Blunt is this generation's Sigourney Weaver.
Interesting. Elaborate. She was in Edge of Tomorrow.
She's really good.
She did that really difficult, slow salute to the sun, didn't she, in the training room that everyone went, ooh, guns.
I want to look like Emily Blunt.
Right.
I want this muscle tone of Emily Blunt in Edge of Tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm slightly worried she probably achieved it by not eating anything and then doing, like, loads of arm muscles, and it was unsustainable.
Just eating muscles.
She did lots of reps.
Yeah.
Maybe she did loads of deadlifts.
I think to build muscle, you just have to do... Just totally beast the muscles you've got with weights, don't you?
No, because we've all got muscles, David.
Speak for yourself.
If you get rid of the fat around the muscle will look like a muscle.
Especially when you put very powerful film lights on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You have to be crazy thin in order to look like an action figure, which is what all people in films look like these days.
So, I mean, maybe it's a very unhealthy look.
I imagine doesn't look like that all the time. Like, she probably just does it for the film and then goes, oh, thank God, eclairs.
Yeah. Like Christina Aguilera.
Is that a thing she does?
She slims down for her music videos and then...
does she?
Puffs up, yeah.
Oh, right, puffs up.
Not that there's anything wrong with either of those things.
No. There's certain pressures upon a pop princess like Christina Aguilera.
I'd just make them cut my face out and then stick it, like, animate it onto a body in the pop video.
Like they did with Cersei Lannister in Game of Thrones.
Exactly. No one noticed that wasn't Cersei Lannister.
No one did at all. The computers are very good at that. Anyway, Sicario. Mm-hmm. I was very excited by this. If you haven't seen the trailers, people, Emily Blunt plays... an FBI agent who is
Clarice Starling.
Very much so. She's idealistic like Clarice Starling as well.
Does she smell of something nice?
There was no... Oh. It wasn't a Smell-O-Vision presentation. So
the big thing of that.
I mean, if it was, she smelled of discarded old popcorn and fizzy drinks and carpet.
Did you go to the Odeon?
I went to the View Islington.
Just as bad.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking.
It doesn't have a yog.
Every single member of staff acts like it's their first day and nobody's given them any training. I asked for an Americano. They have proper big chrome fancy coffee machines all the way along their back wall. I asked for Americano and they went, is that the coffee? Like, yes.
Oh, yes, wow. Did you read that thing that Christopher Nolan said about the experience in a cinema?
No.
And how cinemas have to, like, raise their game? Because people are like, why would I pay 15 quid for this?
He's quite right.
I just wait for it to come on my big telly.
The only cinemas that do it properly, I think, are the independent ones who actually care about film.
Yeah.
And the IMAX. Which is weird, because the IMAX is run by Odeon, but it's also sort of... The one in London, at least, is also BFI, so they sort of...
But he was also... Because he's campaigning for film to be used again, rather than... I don't know why Christopher Nolan wants... But his films must cost so much money if you make them on a film, rather than digital cameras.
Yeah.
He's saying because it's better. But also he said, it's not just about storytelling. If it was just about storytelling, we'd all be making radio plays. And it made me laugh, because that's what you do.
Right. Well, his films certainly aren't all about storytelling.
No,
and they're rarely about storytelling at all.
No.
They're sort of a meandering, cascading mess with some beautiful photography in it.
Exactly. I bet he couldn't tell a story in 45 minutes that was broadcastable at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, he's also wrong about story and radio, because radio, you can't really do subtext, because you can't see what people's faces are like when they say something. You have to do that sitcom acting of, no, I'm not lying. No, I'm not lying at all. That's all you can really do.
Radio 4 afternoon dramas. Yours are good.
Thanks, mate. Sicario. Okay, she plays an idealistic FBI agent who is seconded into a special task force to try and do something to do with drugs coming over the border from Mexico.
It's not important, mate. Wasn't important in Breaking Bad. There's barely any plot in that. Oh, no, hang on. It was really important.
So, the opening scenes of her is her going into a house as the head of a SWAT team.
Yes.
And nearly getting killed, because she seems to be bad at it.
Does she see a spider and run out again?
No, she's nearly shot by a shotgun.
Oh.
But then they discover that... Anyway, I don't want to spoiler everything. And then she's seconded to a team with Josh Brolin.
I don't know who that is.
He was the big brother in the Goonies. And then he was
much
celebrated for No Country for Old Men, which is quite similar to this.
I haven't seen.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I know the name, people listening. I just can't put a face to it.
Sure. Do you want me to show you?
If Jeremy Renner hadn't been in the Mission Impossible films, I'd be exactly the same with him.
Josh Brolin is the new...
Oh, he looks nice. He looks like he can dance.
You reckon?
He
sort of plays sort of smug, cowboyish Han Solo types,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, they can all dance.
I'm sure. Okay, so she's got into this team, and her partner isn't allowed to come. He's Daniel Kaluuya.
Boyfriend partner or...?
No, just with guns
gun
and...
Gun partner,
Gun partner, Daniel
Kaluuya?
Yeah, from Tea Leaf.
From British telly?
From all British telly, Tea Leaf. From Psychoville.
He was the original Marion in Mongrels.
Oh.
He was in the pilot, and then they got rid of him and cast Daniel.
Why was he fired?
He was too laid back. They wanted Marion to be really weird.
Marion was one of my favourite characters. Marion was my favourite character on Mongrels. Mongrels was a puppet show that Danielle Ward wrote for. Marion was played by Dan Tetzel. Oh, buddy. So, anyway, back up to this film, if I can. Benicio del Toro.
That's
quite all right. Quite all right. Benicio del Toro plays a shady Colombian man, and we don't quite know his background. And it's sort of that this idealistic FBI agent is in too deep. She doesn't know what she's got herself in for, even though she's
women.
That is entirely my point. Now, I thought I was really going to enjoy this. The action sequences are great. The cinematography is fantastic. The story. Telling from the source material of the script is wonderful. It's all brilliant. It's really, really good. I have never in my entire life seen a film where the protagonist has less agency. As in, she does nothing and affects nothing. And it's a sort of trope with writers to say that, you know, your protagonist needs to have agency. They don't always, if that's what the story is about, is the fact they don't. This scene, I can't put my finger on why on earth they didn't let the only woman in the film do anything. Like, when she's seconded to this team because she's supposed to be good at her job, but the only thing you see her do at her job is fail at her job and nearly get killed. Then she...
Bitches be crazy.
She is totally out of her depth while all of these cool men are doing sort of one-liner quips and being all the American wet dream of the psychopath laughing boy, cowboy kind of man. You know,
okay.
The one who quips and then just murders people.
Like Buffy.
Yeah, everyone else is that. But, well, no, she murders, you know, horrible monsters. These guys just sort of murder Mexicans.
But that's kind of, that's why Buffy's better.
I guess so. But, oi. I'm sorry, listeners, next door's dog, who is an arsehole, is setting off Buddy
arsehole.
A bit.
Now,
and she does nothing. The incredible moment in this film is when her partner, who has just acted like chauffeur because he's not been allowed to join in this special team.
Of course, and also because he is a black man. And so
well, that doesn't seem to come into it. But
they're a bit racist. America's a tiny bit racist.
Sure.
Tiny bit.
But he goes, what's going on? Why don't you tell me what's going on? She goes, don't ask me, I don't know. And he goes, well, I'm going to ask your boss.
Oh,
and so
fuck's sake.
She wants to know what's going on, but doesn't ask.
Maybe
and
she
then the
him an email.
Another man arrives and asks for her, and then they find out what's going on.
She
literally does
emojis.
Nothing. I mean, the final moment of this film, the entire final moment, comes down to whether she will do something or not. And guess what happens in the end?
Does she not do it?
She doesn't do anything.
Of course she doesn't.
It is phenomenal. But the final act, also, she isn't in. It follows the more interesting character and his male character in his revenge narrative for about 15-20 minutes, and she's not in that bit. It's bizarre.
No.
It feels like an afterthought. Like they saw Mad Max Fury Road and went, tough women on the posters, it's the zeitgeisty thing, come on guys, let's do it.
Well, this is what, because David's already told me how much he hated this film, because, you know, we
I didn't hate it, but it really, really bothered me.
But what I said, and I reckon this is probably what they did, you're right, on the back of Fury Road, they filmed a film, so obviously when you film a film, you've got more film than you need for the film.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Apparently, Christopher Columbus, for the first Harry Potter film,
filmed
a six-hour film and then edited it down to what he wanted, which is why Rick Mail's not in it.
Prick.
Which is a colossal waste of money.
Well, that's why Christopher Nolan filming on... If you film on film, it's very expensive, so that's why you can only really do it with digital stuff. I was saying to you that it sounds to me like this is a film about Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
And they've gone, oh, let's just re-edit it. So, like, on the... See, because obviously when you film anything, you can cut it to be... If you've got enough footage, you can sort of cut any story you want. That's what they do with reality TV. So they've probably gone, oh, everybody's going to get really excited by Emily Blunt. Let's cut it around her. But she isn't the story.
It's really odd, because she is the protagonist 100%. It follows her all the way through, and it's... She's the only one we get any insight into.
But I bet
she
in that original script she wasn't the protagonist.
Well, I've been reading around it, and it got into a bit of controversy in the lead-up because the producers were accused of sexism because they wanted to change her part to being a man.
Okay.
Now, a man with no agency is still the same story. It feels different when she's the only woman in it, and everybody else has agency. Everybody else is potent and powerful and making positive change
That's
in the world.
That's a story you've not seen before.
Yeah.
A man at the centre of something who has no agency. A woman who has no agency. Oh,
oh look, it's
many
life.
times.
It's really strange. She is not kick-ass at all. In the two battle combat situations, actually no, three combat situations.
Is she hides under a table.
She almost gets killed and has to dive to the floor in order to protect herself. She kills a policeman that was going to kill her, and that's all that he was going to do. And she bangs her head on a wooden beam in a night mission.
It doesn't sound very good.
It's very, very well shot, and all of the sequences are great. It's just, I don't know why it's her story. I mean, you haven't seen it, and you're right. It's Benicio del Toro's story. It's just this revenge narrative that you slowly get to see from a third party's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't interesting enough. It seems to be a story about how, hey, idealists, men are going to kill people, yeah, so shut up. Which is... Like, men are going to kill people if we want positive change against violent people. And you liberals, represented here by idealistic women, you leave us to be, yeah? That seems to be what this is about. Because Del Toro even says, you know, this is something like, this is wolf country and you're not a wolf, like towards the end. It's like, oh god, it's not the film I wanted it to be at the end of the day.
Well, it does not sound very good. How many Davids did you give it?
It's so hard because I know I've focused on the thing that bothered me, but it got under my skin bothered me. The rest of the film, for a sort of thriller slash action thing, is very good.
Well, let's judge it as if we were Christopher Nolan and it's all about the story. Oh, no, it's not.
It's not about story at all.
He'd love it then.
You know what? I'd give it probably 6.5, 7. But it's...
I've not seen it. I'm giving it -2.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's 4 in total.
Yeah.
4.5, 5.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Sicario, which apparently means hitman.
Oh, and does Emily Plump.
Plump. Emily Plump.
Does Emily Plump play a hitman?
No.
No.
And Sicario is a masculine word, so it's the Sicario is Benicio del Toro.
Oh, for fuck's sake! I mean, come on, Hollywood. At least give it a different name.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that when that landed on someone's desk, it was like, it's a really cool revenge thriller about a hitman. Oh, great. Can we put a lady in it and put her on the poster?
Yeah.
And all they've done, they've probably just cut 5 scenes that open.
No, it's... I mean, it's tricky. They have cut stuff with Benicio del Toro. I read about that as well. And to make him more mysterious. But again, they've cut him to make him... bigger in the story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got fewer scenes, but he's far more interesting. I love Emily Blunt. I think she's really good and versatile as well. The fact that she can play sort of these kick-ass warrioresses in Edge of Tomorrow and still do comedy and...
Have you seen that Paddy Considine film she was in? Summer of My Love?
No.
It's really good.
When was that?
It was early. One of her early films. It must have been about 10, 12 years ago.
Because
it's ever so good. I don't remember anything about it.
Wasn't
she really good?
Didn't she become famous after Devil Wears Prada, where she played the receptionist?
Yeah.
My Summer of Love. Yes, I have heard of that. I didn't know it was Paddy Considine.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Well, the IMDb synopsis is: in the Yorkshire countryside, working class tomboy Mona, played by Natalie Press, meets the exotic, pampered Tamsin, Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Over the summer season, the two young women discover they have much, and then I can't read on from that.
They have much in common.
In common, okay.
I imagine. I can't remember. I'll tell you one thing about Emily Blunt. So I did a thing with Harriet Walter.
Yes.
She's a dame. American listeners, that means she's practically the queen.
Not that she does panto.
She was saying that she worked with Emily Blunt when she was like 17 or 18. Emily Blunt, not Harriet Walter. Harriet Walter's in her 60s.
I mean, Emily Blunt would have been just some sperm and some eggs then.
Not even that. And she said that Emily Blunt was brilliant and everybody knew she was going to be really famous because she was just uber professional and great and nice. And that's my Emily Blunt story.
So the lesson to learn from that is, if you're not great yet, you won't be.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't smashed it, guys, by the time you're 21, just give up.
Just try and, you know...
Do admin.
Be as quiet and as happy as you can be. Don't get in the way, yeah? For winners. Well, there you go. Shall we have some letters?
Yeah.
Who is your favourite, whilst I look up these letters?
Chris Webb.
Everyone's favourite, Chris Webb. Who is your favourite badass lady heroine? Your female protagonist? Apart from Ripley, obviously.
Apart from Ripley.
Who else would make the top, you know, 5?
Well, I think, I mean, I know it's only because she's awful, but Nomi in Showgirls is obviously brilliant.
Badass lady heroine. Hey, she does. She goes on a revenge spree, doesn't she?
She really does. The first thing she does is steal a thing at knife point.
That's true, yeah.
She gets that guy to leave his car, and then he picks her up at the end, and she's kind of cool with it. They're both cool with each other. I love that film. I love that film so much.
Verhoeven's sex movies are weird.
No, it's great, it's great.
His robot movies are better.
I absolutely love Liza Minnelli in Cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favourite female roles. And also her lovely mum, Judy Garland, in The Star Is Born. That's such a great film. Basically, if you ever get dumped by a man, watch A Star Is Born and go, oh, they're rubbish anyway.
I don't mean
to bring any misandry to it. I'm not like that.
I had a thought the other day.
A Star Is Born.
That I was thinking about heroines in female protagonists in films. Mm-hmm. And Alien is sort of ahead of its time in terms of how badass Ripley is.
Yeah.
But I think it may have been a mixture of happy accident and just, you know, the team building towards something slightly better than what they had. Because yeah. Alien is, at its heart, a genre piece, haunted house movie.
Yeah.
And it's the typical thing to do for a haunted house movie is your protagonist is a frightened woman.
Yes.
And yet we know that Dan O'Bannon, who wrote the screenplay, wrote it gender neutral. Yeah. That's right. All of the parts all were gender neutral, weren't they?
Yeah.
So he's written dialogue that isn't all girly, girly girl. Mm-hmm. And they've gone, oh, but in this genre, people like it when it's a fragile, delicate woman being chased around.
And it's always the woman that survives as well.
Yes. And so those combinations actually gave us one of the best heroines in cinema.
Yeah.
In The Terminator, with a franchise that came along a bit later,
yeah.
and in Aliens,
yeah.
James Cameron, I think, has consciously pushed that agenda.
Yeah.
Because in Aliens, she is explicitly maternal
yes.
and becomes a warrioress in order to protect.
Yeah.
And Sarah Connor in Terminator, in the first one, has an arc from girly girl to warrioress, and in the second one is the most badass woman in all of cinema as well.
Well, that's why I prefer Alien to Aliens, because Ripley in Alien is a human being
yes.
staying alive. She's not a mother versus mother. I mean, that's all like really interesting, and Aliens has its merits in many, many ways, but I think Alien's more interesting because it is gender neutral, and it's one of the only examples of a female character that could be, like, the fact that she could be played by a man is really fascinating, because, you know, sometimes women aren't all obsessed with babies and stuff.
It's true, sometimes they do
sometimes
other stuff.
Sometimes they do other things.
You know, like, you know, just have a job and then have to
have a job
survive
and
against
not
the monster.
I mean,
yeah.
We've all been there, right, guys?
We've all been there. But it just got me to thinking that maybe James Cameron knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, if you see his later work, especially Prometheus and stuff, maybe it was just a mistake. Just an accident.
Oh, it almost certainly was.
And Sigourney Weaver filled in the blanks very, very well.
Yeah. That's... I mean, there are... There's like a million great female protagonists. They're just the ones from my own personal...
Of course,
DVD
yeah, yeah.
What else have I got?
I'm just thinking about the pre-Joss Whedon era, you know, when female warrioresses weren't as common.
Oh, I tell you who is good.
Who?
What's her name in Million Dollar Baby?
Oh, Hilary Swank.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Doesn't end well for her, does it?
It doesn't, but that's why it's great as well.
She is good in
that. That's the story of the champ. It's the story of a person who tries to become... It's like the anti-sport... I mean, it's a sports movie. It's the sad sports movie ending rather than the glorious sports movie ending.
It's not Rocky.
It's not Rocky. It's the anti-Rocky. But the idea...
It's Rocky where in the final act he gets lymphoma.
Yeah. But that's why, like, The Champ is a great film, because it's that sort of, I'm going to do the best for my kid and I'm going to be a great fighter and don't want to give anything away, but Million Dollar Baby is quite a lot like The Champ, and that's what I think it's a great film.
Yeah,
I'd have given it an Oscar. I'd have given it two. Maybe it got two. I can't remember.
Right, we've got some letters here.
Yeah.
Before I read them, I want to fulfil my promise from last week. Marek isn't here, so I'll have to fill him in. But I just want to say, for people who understand, the dog survived. So, we've got a letter here.
Is this about
The Drop?
The Drop.
Yeah.
Is it good? I thought it was meant to be rubbish. I've not listened to last week's
You know, episode. I think it was incredibly cheap. It's got a fantastic cast. It's a fun little story. It feels like we've seen TV episodes as good as this now.
Yeah.
It just happens to have
that's
a great cast
TV
in it.
Is better.
You know, that's the thing. Yeah. It's the budget has only allowed them to sort of do, and it's a sort of fun little intimate thriller.
Yeah.
And that's what telly is now. So, yeah. No, it's fun. It's worth seeing if you like Tom Hardy or James Gamba thingy. Gambas. What's his name? Gambaccini.
Gandolfini.
Gandolfini.
You're thinking of Paul Giamatti. You're getting the surnames mixed
up. I did it last week as well. Okay, so I've got an email here. This is from Anne Coletta, who would like it done in an Italian accent, preferably Sicilian. Oh, God. Okay.
What is that like? That's Italian American I'm thinking of. Yeah. I'm thinking The Godfather.
Yeah, he's got a Sicilian accent.
But it's Sicilian. It's kind of like this. Mm. Inconceivable!
It's not Sylvester the Cat.
That's what I was doing. Whose catchphrase is inconceivable?
You were kind of doing Sylvester the Cat.
No! I was doing whatever his name is from The Princess Bride.
Oh, is that what you were doing? Okay.
What's his name? Anyway.
Wallace
Italian.
Shawn.
Yeah, Wallace Shawn, thank you.
Get mixed up with Sean Wallace from The Chase.
God, names. Can't we just all have a number? Can't we all just be our phone number?
Yeah.
That would be easier. Dear David, Marek and Budi, long time no email. Sorry about that, but I've been too busy to stalk you. Too busy to drop your line now and then. Happy belated 200th. I will do my celebrating at episode 208. 4 years, wow! Film Fandango provided my soundtrack as I drove to Rhode Island from Albany, New York.
We've been there.
We have.
It's really boring.
It's quite dull. And then back again a few days later. So thank you for keeping me entertained. Hey, Marek. Not here. I get to drive through Norwich when I make this trip. Norwich, Connecticut, that is. I don't know Marek's connection with Norwich, but I'm sure he has one. I don't have cable or even free over-the-air TV at home, so I was excited to find out my hotel had free cable TV, then was immediately disappointed when I realized it was channel after channel of rubbish. My movie choice was between Paul Blart Mall Cop, which I know Marek saw and enjoyed, and Knocked Up. Heard good reviews of this, but it's just not my thing.
Very offended by a certain scene in Knocked Up. We'll get onto that.
Oh, will we? Good. Anyway, I was wondering if you two have seen The Graduate 1967. Do you think this could be made as a contemporary film? As I thought Dustin Hoffman's character had a little bit of innocence or naivete that seems to be lacking in our current times. If you think it could be made today and set today, who would you cast in lieu of Dustin Hoffman, Anne Bancroft and Catherine Ross? If you don't think it could be set today, who could you cast in a remake set in the 60s? Also, I think a fellow Fandangan posted on the Facebook page about guilty film pleasures. When I was a teenager, my best friend and I saw Jumping Jack Flash, Whoopi Goldberg and Jonathan Pryce, over and over again. I am so ashamed now. I also, please forgive me, enjoyed Waterworld, and I've seen it at least 3 times since its release in 1995. I can't think of any more recent than that as I have become a grumpy curmudgeon in my old age. See above reference to not wanting to watch Knocked Up, even though everyone else seems to love it. Keep watching the films, Anne. So.
Really fancy some Dolmio right now.
When is your Dolmio day?
Yeah, huh?
That's the, all Italians speak like that. Like Mario. It's a real Mario.
Mario who?
Mario Baratelli. No, Mario, the Nintendo character, the plumber.
Do they speak?
They do in the cartoons,
not
yeah.
Not seen it.
And when...
never played computer
when,
games.
When Bob Hoskins played him, he didn't do that accent.
My problem with Knocked Up is... right, where she actually gives birth, they show a shot of the baby crowning.
Right.
And Katherine Heigl has... well, it's obviously not her. This prosthetic
they
vagina...
They didn't put a baby up her in order to shoot that, no.
The prosthetic vagina has no pubic hair whatsoever.
It's Americans like, are weird about hair, though.
But, like, she's having a baby.
Yeah.
You don't have a full... I mean, maybe you do. I've not had a baby, but come on. Also, I'm quite convinced that the reason people have pubic hair is so it's like, you know, the brushes at a car wash?
Yes.
When your car goes through and you get all the gunk off.
To clean the baby.
To clean the baby on the way out.
Obviously, that's why the inside is all hairy. But the outside, what? Just like a doormat. You rub it off before you hand it over.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
anyway,
that makes sense.
Anyway, I found it really offensive.
But they are really weird about
spreading
hair.
Spreading the idea that women should have a full... I mean, obviously it's a woman's choice, but by putting it in a film, they're perpetuating the idea that woman has to have no hair on her
in
at
America,
all, she's having a baby.
In America, it's men as well. Watched a New Girl episode recently where someone's just jokingly unbuttoning someone's shirt and he just goes, no, you don't want that unless you like hair. And it's just like... Do Americans seem to think sexuality means hairless for both genders? And that, to me, suggests they watch too much pornography.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what you think?
Yeah, I think probably. The country who statistically have been proven watch more pornography than anyone else probably watch too much pornography.
Okay.
Anyway, other questions we were asked there.
The Graduate.
The Graduate. Could it be made today?
Dustin.
Dustin Hoffman.
I think it could. I absolutely think it could.
Yeah?
Yeah. Say it on Tinder.
It was weird. When things were shot on film, you got a lot more sort of weedy, slightly odd-looking, charismatic men seducing ladies or being seduced by ladies rather than, oh, we'll get onto that when we talk about the film you've chosen to talk about. But these days, everyone seems to be a mega hunk or a mega hottie, don't they? I don't think The Graduate would work if it was Channing Tatum. Do you know what I mean?
No. I mean, it would only work if it was... It would have to be someone who...
But who is that equivalent now? Who can open a movie but isn't, you know, doesn't look like one day they will play someone in the Marvel universe?
It wouldn't be someone who can... You wouldn't have it as someone who can open a movie. It would have to be an unknown. Justin Hoffman was fairly unknown, though, wasn't he? When he made The Graduate?
Marathon Man had he made already? No, probably not.
No, I think it was Anne Bancroft that was the the big name.
The legs on the poster were the big name. Everyone went, oh, Anne Bancroft's legs.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Casting takes a lot of time. You can't just... Joe Lycett.
I don't think I'd believe it.
Joe Lycett playing opposite Olivia Colman. Okay. I mean, come on, if that's not a...
Well, there you go. That's not
amazing. And playing the woman, I don't know, throw a pin at someone who's just graduated from drama school, I don't care.
Wow, okay. Any guilty pleasure films?
This doesn't exist.
You think you either enjoy them or you don't?
Showgirls isn't a guilty pleasure. It's one of the greatest films ever made.
Okay.
It's not a guilty pleasure.
No, I think I agree. I think the concept of guilty pleasure sort of implies that you care too much about what other people think of it. Of you. So you go, it's a guilty pleasure, so don't judge me.
Oh, I like, dude, I am not 17. I just don't, There's nothing in my book or record collection or film choices that would make me go, oh no, someone's going to really judge me for that.
I'll say it's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah,
I like Waterworld. I think it's good fun.
I've not seen it.
It's Mad Max on water, 100%.
I've not seen Mad Max.
It's Waterworld on sand.
Mel Gibson films, is it?
Yeah. No, I mean, yes. You haven't seen Mel Gibson. No, you've seen one now, haven't you?
I haven't.
You saw one.
No.
Expendables 3.
Oh, he's in that, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's the only Mel Gibson film I've seen.
Well, it is his most celebrated.
I was worried. What if I got hit by a bus and I was lying in the road as my last moments ebbed away and I thought, oh, I wish I'd seen a Mel Gibson film.
I mean, I'd be more worried those were your last thoughts, really.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no, we've poo-pooed your very concept of guilty pleasures, which...
Yeah, I just don't... It's not a thing... Like, I just... First of all, I'm a stand-up comedian, so I'm so used to people hating me on sight. By the time we get to people hating me because of my film collection, I'm safe territory anyway.
Yeah.
So,
Well, that's fair enough. Have you seen Jumping Jack Flash?
I have not seen it. It's great. I forgot Jonathan Pryce was in it. It's a really fun film.
Is it?
Really fun. Yeah, it's one of those fun 80s romp-alongs, unlikely hero, you know, the reluctant hero sucked into a situation. It's really fun. Really fun.
I'm confusing it, then, with that future dystopia that has Mick Jagger in it. What's that? Have you seen that?
Time Cop.
He's not in Time Cop.
New Jack City.
No, not New Jack City. There's a film with Mick Jagger in it.
I remember. I think it is Time Cop.
Is it?
I don't know. You might want to look it up. That's what came to mind.
Hang on. I'm looking it up now. I'm sure you guys are just shouting it on the bus or wherever you are. Free Jack. That's it. Bounty hunters from the future transport a doomed race car driver to 2009 New York.
I have not seen it.
Emilio Estevez, Renny Russo, Anthony Hopkins... And Mike from Breaking Bad.
Oh,
there you go.
That's good.
I can say nothing about Free Jack other than I have pictures of it in my head.
But, well, you know, we knew it had a jack in it.
Yeah. Well, so we were doing all right. We were halfway there. All right. Shall we read one more letter?
Yes.
Am I doing it again?
Yeah, I just... Well, what accent do they want?
They want...
Also, you don't edit these letters.
No, we don't.
You should really edit them.
No, it takes too long.
Sub them down.
No. This is from Neil Godfrey, and he wants it read in my Jeremy Clarkson voice from The Sheriffs Are Coming on television.
Oh, okay,
so do you want to do that?
Yeah, you've got to do it then.
Okay. This is a documentary series I voice for BBC One about High Court enforcement officers. I can't even remember.
Part of the problem.
What? Hey?
The High Court enforcement officers.
What about them?
It's all part of making society a worse place.
No, they get people's money back that's rightfully there.
They take money off people.
Yeah, mostly off arsehole businessmen who haven't given you the car that you've paid for.
Oh, really? Is it that way around?
Yeah. They mostly... Oh, Dan, don't get me started on this. The system's broken, mate. But these guys, you know, sometimes... I mean, they just enforce without emotion.
They're not like the
Sheriff
of Nottingham. That's where I thought they'd got the name from.
Well, it is.
The Sheriff of Nottingham
is
coming.
It is, because they're money collectors for the High Court. But, you know, now there's far more small businesses than peasants' hand.
Okay.
Didn't they? I guess. I don't know. What voice do I do on the Sheriffs? It's been a while.
It's a sort of...
The Sheriffs! Hello, guys! First time, long time here. Blah, blah, blah. I love the show. I was thinking, during your discussion of Jason Clarke last week, of how his career is similar to Sam Worthington.
Ugh.
Both Australian, both appear in big American special effects blockbusters, Avatar and Planet of the Apes. They both star in a Terminator movie, both have worked with Keira Knightley, and finally, both are bland as fuck. Spooky, eh? I too am baffled by their success, and can't see how they are so famous. Hopefully they will disappear soon. I notice that currently you are 88th in the film and TV podcast chart on iTunes, yet the Danielle Ward version is at 67. I don't get it. Even a Simpsons and Family Guy podcast is higher than you in the charts, and they haven't produced a show in over 7 years. Does this depress you?
Ouch.
One last thing. You know when you see no animal was harmed in the making of this film during the credits of some films? Well, I was wondering what happens when an animal actually does get hurt, or even killed during a shoot. Do they have to mention it? Or just keep quiet and hope that no one notices. Goodbye and good luck. Neil Godfrey, Fareham. Sent from my Commodore 64.
Ooh, I'm from Fareham.
Do you know Neil? Old friend from school?
Do you know, it sort of rings a bell. Yeah. I think Neil Godfrey was in my year at school. Neil, were we in the same year at school? It would make a lot of sense.
That would make sense. So we
went. David was in Fareham last weekend.
I was in Fareham. Wonderful place, Neil. You were very sensible to stay. We went through 3 points there.
Yeah.
Now, do you know who Jason Clarke is?
No.
Now, he played John Connor in the Terminator film No One Went to See.
Which one was that one?
Genesis.
Oh, okay. I started watching Salvation and turned it off after 3 minutes because it was so fucking boring. And I love Christian Bale.
He plays the torturer in Zero Dark Thirty, and he was just in Everest. He's that bloke.
Oh! It's like someone has taken Chandler and photoshopped his features to be a lot smaller.
That's right. He's weird.
Yeah.
He's weirdly in a load of blockbusters.
Oh my god, it makes me so depressed. There are better looking women than that.
He's not a woman. Oh, no maybe that was the mistake. He's a man. He's a man.
But to be a man in Hollywood, you don't even have to be good looking.
I think you do. But just somehow he's got in.
He's tiny Chandler.
Well, I can also tell you.
Chandler's face, shrink his features.
He's really boring as well. He's really dull.
That's why I love Tom Cruise. I know a lot of people have a problem with him, but I think he's great.
I like Tom Cruise. In the right role.
I like
and luckily, he only ever does the right role for him. He's very good at that,
he is.
Isn't he? Unlike, I would say, for instance, Jennifer Lopez, who only ever picks the wrong role.
Yeah.
Or Halle Berry's not very good at picking roles, is she? But anyway.
I don't think that's the role's fault, Dave.
No, you're probably right there. But no, she always, Emily Blunt, Halle Berry'd all the way through Sicario.
Halle Berry.
She Halle Berry'd, which is being terrified of everything.
That weird staggered breathing that people think is acting?
Halle Berrying.
That what? And or Angel from Buffying as well. He doesn't do it when he gets to Angel. He's fine. It's only in the scenes with Buffy. It's like, Buffy! Used to really annoy me.
I wonder if someone teaches you to do that.
Everybody likes Spike. Spike never does that. Why does it a bit when he's back when he's a poet? Does a bit of
when he's a poet?
Spike, that's why he's called William the Bloody, because his poetry was bloody awful. That's the joke.
I haven't seen enough Buffy to get this, clearly. Okay, The second point was that somehow the old absolute ones are higher in the iTunes charts. Now, not to get too into it, we don't really care, but iTunes works on acceleration, not speed. Yeah. It's how many you're gaining or losing rather than how many you've got.
Mm-hmm.
So we were above Komodo Mayo when we first went independent, because suddenly we went from zero to however many listeners we have. I would guess that because they have the Absolute Radio brand on, people are still listening to them every now and again. Mm-hmm. And our publicity budget is zero. So that's probably...
Maybe it's 'cause people like me.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure that's one of the reasons that people go, yeah, definitely. But, yeah, I mean, that's sad to hear, but I don't really care. As long as people keep writing in, it's fine. And no animals were harmed.
We made no money doing it on Absolute, and you make some money now.
We lost money doing it on Absolute.
Oh, we did.
I've explained it to the listeners. I told them on the 200th episode why we left Absolute.
Oh.
No, so now, luckily, we break even with your donations. And I may as well do it now. That's exactly how this works.
Gotta keep Mama in York.
It cost 14 quid to go see Sicario in London. And that's not cheap. So if you would like this podcast to keep going, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk, follow the link there, and donate anything you can. We've done over 200 episodes. You can listen to them all from our website. And to everyone who has, thank you very much. No animals were harmed in the making of this movie. Now, I don't think there's any legal obligation to put that. I think they do it if they've got a scene where an animal dies or something, just to make crazies not bother writing to
them. Yeah, absolutely.
So they won't write it if they have killed a horse.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like when you see someone killed in a film, they have to put at the end, no, Tom Hardy's were killed in the making of this.
No, Baines were killed by motorbike cannon in the making of this film.
They don't have to do that.
No. Also, killing a lot of animals isn't illegal, is it? So...
No, but obviously very famously, Cannibal Holocaust, where they do kill a turtle...
Is that right?
...got huge backlash. Absolutely. I think they got taken for animal... I think there was like a court case about animal rights, but also people thought people had been killed in that, so it was a bit weird.
Well, do you remember that film, was it called Outback, where there's the kangaroo shoot?
Yes.
Footage, which is all real, of killing real kangaroos at night.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
But all real. Yeah. No, I think it's just covering your bum against crazies.
I don't think
there's any legal obligation to do it.
I don't like animal snuff films.
No.
I don't really want to see it.
Well, no, animal snuff films, I don't think. It's a very niche. there's a world of difference in between, you know.
I don't know. If you're killing an animal for entertainment, though, is that worse than killing it for food? They keep pigs on their sides and then kill them for bacon. I think a kangaroo that has been a movie star shot in the wild is...
I mean, movie star's a bit of a push. One of those kangaroos wasn't higher billing than Donald Pleasance.
I'd still reckon the kangaroo that's killed in a film or the turtle that's killed in Hannibal Collywobbles. Have had a lovelier life than the pigs that are kept on their sides and killed for bacon.
Okay. Daniel's buddy. He agrees. Mm. Although he does like bacon, he's conflicted.
He does love bacon.
Hello, listeners. I'm very sorry I cannot be there with you, David, and Danielle today due to, would you believe it, work commitments. Who'd have thought that finally, after years of unemployment, I'm managing to resurrect my career? For our film lovers, you may be interested to know that I've been doing one of my weirdest ever jobs. It's a family feature film called 2 Hours, which will probably come out in 2016 if it gets made. I am fascinated to see how this turns out, because I've done some of the most offensive overacting ever seen in this. And also, if you're bored and on IMDb, you have to look up an actor or an extra called Phelim Kelly, Phelim Kelly with a K. Just did some very interesting extra work. You can get the gist of it by looking him up. Anyway, that's what I've been doing. So we'll talk about that at a later date. Meanwhile, I've had the time to go and see the film I've most been looking forward to for the past year, The Martian. The reason I'm looking forward to this is because I've probably mentioned it and been banging on about it. I read Andy Weir's book, the writer of the book. He published this on Amazon as he self-published it. And by some fluke, about 3 years ago, I was going through Amazon looking through the top list of new books. And his was towards the top. And I thought, oh, do you know what? That's 50p. Well, it's quite interesting. I'll give it a go. And I thought it was brilliant. I was really amazed. And I've read a couple of other books that I've tried, which some of the biggest shit known to mankind. But The Martian was brilliant. Well, it had to be, because it later got snapped up by publishers, and then it got sold, became an international bestseller, and then this film happened. Now, The Martian has got a really good score on IMDb. Everyone's going on about how great it was. I went to watch it in 3D. It's one of the very few films that works in 3D, because it's not gratuitous 3D shots. What worked for me was the landscape of Mars. You get to see it in its beautiful 3D entirety, which made it seem more alien and more vast and more spectacular. That was a good thing about the film. The film's a good film. I can't deny that. The problem is, and we talked about this before, books are better than films. Almost all books are better than films. A few exceptions are, great adaptations are The Godfather, Mario Puzo's book, was brilliantly adapted into a film by Coppola. And I actually prefer Apocalypse Now to Heart of Darkness, which is loosely based on. Anyway, that's beside the point. The main problem is that the book is not really a drama. It's about a character solving problems stuck on Mars. And you, as a reader, are his sole companion. And it's a monologue. And it's very difficult for any film to get across that feeling of complete distance on from people on Earth and replicate the it's difficult without David here to fill in the gaps. It's difficult to replicate that relationship between the reader and the author. Like, he's talking in he's basically it's a monologue in his mind. What are they called? Mind monologue. I know the word. It's soliloquy. That's the word. I've done it. And he can't really do that on film. He has to say it out loud. And the character isn't really emotional. The character's quite scientific and matter of fact. And although Matt Damon is very charismatic, I don't necessarily think that he was faithful to the character in the book. Well, maybe he was. Anyway, I didn't like all the Earth stuff. I thought Kristen Wiig, I don't know how to say her surname, the one from Bridesmaids, was massively miscast as a scientist. She looks like 5% of her is stuck in a comedy film and putting the wrong expressions. It just, I don't know how this has got such a high rating. I thought it was just a fairly good sci-fi film. If you want to see a great sci-fi film about someone being stuck on a planet, watch Moon. Moon is shits on this. And a much better film. Maybe this is just more mainstream. I don't know. This looks great. People say it's returned to form from Ridley Scott. I don't think it's got any real edge to it. I didn't really feel any sense of, like, in Gravity, you feel a sense of her trying to get Sandra Bullock trying to get back to Earth, and it feels there's more tension here. I didn't really feel that tension in the book. I don't really think they just had to pad it out with all these people on Earth trying to get them him back. I don't know. I was disappointed. I think for many reasons, high expectations, reading the book, the fact that the book was such a personal thing between you and a characters stuck on Mars and done in a different way to normal books, almost written by an autistic person. It just was a bit disappointing. Seven Marics, I've talked for a long time. Next week, I'm going to talk about Macbeth. And I did a Macbeth double bill where I watched the new Macbeth and then someone recommended to me the 1971 Polanski Macbeth. So just watch those two because it's fascinating. All right. Hey, I best get back to work because I'm so successful. Keep watching the films.
So why don't we move on to the film you brought in? Why don't you tell our listeners what it is?
This is a film that I've wanted to do on Film Fandango for a while. And it is the film Bad Timing, which no one seems to have heard of.
Bad Timing.
It's a Nicholas Roeg film. And Nicholas Roeg obviously made Performance. He made Don't Look Now.
The Man Who Fell to Earth.
The Witches.
Which I still find weird that he made The Witches.
Very odd, yeah.
I haven't seen it in years, but I remember it being properly frightening. And I know people, I mean, let's not dwell on The Witches as his most celebrated work, but it's a properly good kids' adaptation.
Brilliant film.
And people remember the Angelica Houston mask taking off as the scary bit. The little girl in the painting in the opening story was the bit that freaked me out the most.
I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant film. And it is odd because he's got a real style. And partly what happens in a lot of his films is the very realistic sex, which doesn't happen in The Witches.
No, very unrealistic.
Not in the source material, I guess. He decided not to stick it in there just for... No. So, I really like Nicholas Roeg, and I found this film in a little weird independent DVD shop in Stoke Newington. It might be the one that's closed down now. There's a shop in Stoke Newington Church Street, and it always looked like a pawn shop, because it's like DVDs and films... blacked out windows. I was like, this must be a pawn shop. And I poked my head round one day because it had a few films in the window that weren't porn, and it isn't. It was just specialist films, just sort of films you can't get anywhere else. And I bought three films, one of which was Martin, that vampire film.
I've not seen that.
Martin is like a George Romero film. And I bought it as a present for someone, so it's like three films. I bought that, something else, and he said to me, the man in the shop said, "Have you seen this?" I was like, "No, I don't know what." And he's like, "It's part of." He said, "If you consider it a trilogy of Nicholas Roeg films starring pop stars, it's the third one that he made." So he made Performance starring Mick Jagger, The Man Who Fell to Earth starring David Bowie, and then he made Bad Timing
starring Art Garfunkel.
Art Garfunkel,
who is of course. Finishes that triptych of sexy pop stars.
Sexy pop stars.
Mick Jagger, David Bowie, and Art Garfunkel.
Well, there's a certain charm to him, actually, I think, in Bad Timing.
Well, that's what they try to capture, don't they? Why don't you tell us briefly what it's about?
It's about a very destructive relationship. It's set in Vienna. It's about a crazy 20-something woman. You know, we all know her. Gets drunk, a little bit weird.
Everybody's in love with her.
Everybody's in love with her. Drape stuff on things, that sort of woman.
I've met those women who drape stuff on things.
Loads of vintage tat in her apartment. Sure. You know, that kind of woman.
Very messy woman.
And Art Garfunkel plays a largely prim and proper PhD, he's a doctor, isn't he, of psychology. And they meet and they fall in love, and it's a very destructive, unhealthy relationship. And it's told non-linearly, and the film opens with Teresa Russell being rushed into hospital because she's taken an overdose, and Art Garfunkel rushes her in, and they ask him, "When did she call you?" And he says, "Oh, it must have been out half an hour ago."
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And then there's a shot of the answer machine of him taking the message, and his watch says, I think it's 10:30, it might even be 9:30.
And the rest is basically... What happened in those hours and what happened from the beginning of their relationship to that point, simultaneously.
Yeah, so mainly it's about their relationship, and it's all told in flashback, and it's all about how they got to a point where the thing that happens in these few hours happens.
And you've got Harvey Keitel as the detective who's investigating whether or not there's any foul play.
Yeah.
And you've got Denham Elliot as
Teresa
a man
Russell's
from...
husband.
Yeah, yeah. I love Denham Elliot.
He's great.
I don't really know why. And
he's my favourite man named after a type of gene.
And who is your second favourite man? Gene Simmons?
Gene Hackman. Rossiter from... his name's Martin Rossiter from the band Gene.
Oh, well. Hey-ho. I hadn't seen this film before. I thought it was excellent.
I love it. I really love this film.
I haven't seen Don't Look Now. But I have seen The Man Who Fell to Earth and The Witches.
Yeah. You've seen Walkabout?
Yes, I've seen Walkabout, which is...
Similarly creepy. Especially
if you've
really
seen
creepy.
Crocodile Dundee, because Wally from Crocodile Dundee abandons his children in the outback and shoots himself in the head. And it's the most unlikely spin-off of Crocodile Dundee I've ever seen.
He sets fire to himself before he shoots himself in the head.
You're right, he does, doesn't he?
I think Nicholas Roeg's one of those great filmmakers who puts... Just in every film that he makes, there's a really iconic scene. Just like one moment that you've not seen elsewhere in cinema, which is also why I loved Under the Skin. Completely different film,
yes.
Completely different filmmaker.
No, but similar feel. I don't think Under the Skin is non-linear. It is a bit, because you have characters recalling things.
Yeah.
And
the,
I
but
thought
it's
what
not
was...
so much that. It's more the fact that in Under the Skin, you get these three moments in Under the Skin that I've never seen in a film before that I found incredible.
Yes. Yes.
And I think a lot of Nicholas Roeg films, I haven't seen them all. I've seen, there's another one with Teresa Russell made quite a few films with him.
Made seven or something?
Got together with him and they got married.
They got married and then divorced.
And then divorced, like most people. So yes, it's their relationship is so, it's destructive, but it's not even in an obviously destructive way, in the way something like Sid and Nancy is really obviously destructive and romanticised. It's quite subtly destructive in many ways.
I mean, I think it's very well told. You are sort of enjoying how they are enjoying each other in the early stages.
Yeah.
I mean, which is the correct way
There's
to tell it.
There's lots of fun flirting, and you know, and she's a little bit out there, and he's a little bit reserved, and it's really fun. And even like the moment when it comes to what happens in those few hours between her calling him saying she's taken an overdose and him taking to the hospital. It's horrific, but also quite subtle by modern standards.
Yeah.
You know, there's a brutality to it. Like, what I think is really interesting is they play with who is the destructive one in the relationship. The storytelling plays with who that
yes.
is. They play with it being Teresa Russell. They play with it being Art Garfunkel, because at first he seems like this quite sensible one. But that it all builds to that moment in those when you finally find out what happens in those in that space, and it's like brutal and horrific, but also oddly romantic, oddly in a very awful, destructive way. I think it's an incredible film.
I think it's great. Yeah, it's really good.
But you did say, and this is, I think you have to be on board with this as a Nicholas Roeg style, is that he does tend to tell quite a slow story that builds to a moment.
One moment, yeah.
The same thing happens in Don't Look Now. Like, Don't Look Now, basically, first time I saw Don't Look Now was with my friends Mel and Tim put it on. This first Nicholas Roeg film I'd seen, and he put it on. He says, it's really, really good. You've got to watch it. And watching Don't Look Now, some beautiful shots. You know, shots of Venice, looks really lovely. You're building it. There's a really scary bit at the beginning of Don't Look Now. And then it sort of builds up and builds up. It's quite slow. It's just about this couple and the breakdown of their relationship, and then finding themselves again after their daughter gets killed. And then you have the money shot at the end. And I'm sure you all know what happens at the end of Don't Look Now. So I'm going to say it. My friend Tim just sat up and went, "It's a fucking dwarf!" And he was like, he'd been waiting for 2 hours to go, "It was a dwarf! He gets killed by a dwarf!"
He was just wanting to share that with you.
And it was really funny, and that's how Don't Look Now ends. I'm sorry.
That's your friend Tim.
It's such a beautiful film, Don't Look Now.
Oh. Well, thank you for bringing Bad Timing in.
You're welcome.
Where can people track it down? Have you any ideas?
I have no idea.
Still, is it still as unavailable? Because wasn't it X-rated or something?
Yes, it was X-rated in America. I think just because they don't like the idea of Art Garfunkel nobbing someone, really.
I mean, none of us are really into it.
I think there's something quite endearing about him in it, I think.
It was a bit like, and we said this at the time, it is a bit like Andy Zaltzman going out with Natalie Dormer. I mean, there's an odd pairing.
There's a disparity between them. But then, you know what? They're in Vienna under communist rule. Maybe it was difficult to find someone hot to hook up with. She's married to Denham Elliot. I mean,
sure.
It's like...
She's got a type.
It's like Natalie Dormer going out with Andy Zaltzman while at the same time being married to...
John Oliver.
No.
Who's the modern Denham Elliot?
I'm thinking in our comedy analogy.
Yeah.
It's like... Natalie Dormer being married to Count Arthur Strong.
That is correct, yes. I want to see that remake.
It'd be great. That's if we're recasting it. Who would play Harvey Keitel? Harvey Keitel looks exactly like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
It's odd, isn't it?
Timing, yeah.
It's odd. He's good in it. He's very good.
I don't know where you can get it. It might be available on YouTube. It might be available from specialist DVD shops that don't sell porn. If they still exist. Do you know what? It might be on Love Film, though I don't think it is. If you want to know what happens in the 3 hour... If you can't find this film and you want to know what happens in the 3 hour space between Teresa Russell calling Art Garfunkel and him taking her to the hospital...
Don't tell them.
No, I'm not going to tell them. Get in touch. Email me.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll let you know.
Spoilers@gmail.com. Well, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And filling in for Marek.
Do I get my money back for the commute?
Yes, you do. Yes, we cover that. But you will have to pay for your own milk and sugar if you've used those in your tea. Marek will hopefully be unemployed again next week and he'll be back. I would like to say we set up last week that we were going to talk about a film called Dear Zachary, A Letter to a Son About His Father. Now... Marek and I have both seen it. Obviously, he's not here this week, so we're going to talk about it next week. It is a phenomenal documentary. It is freely and legally available on YouTube. So if you would like to know what we're talking about and therefore not have it spoiled next week, watch it in the next week. Homework for you. Dear Zachary, A Letter to a Son About His Father. You will not regret it. It's a phenomenal piece of work. If you'd like to write to us about anything, recommend a film, or just shout at us for recommending something you hated, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or you can post things to one another on Facebook, /filmfandango. Or you can tweet us, @filmfandango, @MrDavidReed, or @CaptainWard.
Yes, we can DM, and I can tell you what happened. My foot's gone dead.
Danger Mouse? What, your foot's gone dead?
On Twitter, if you do @CaptainWard.
Oh, right.
Or MissBonnieHouston@gmail.com. It's an assistant I invented for booking gigs.
That's very good. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
There'll be a new series of Do the Right Thing out in January, probably. We've got 2 gigs coming up in the autumn. We're doing the 15th of November at the Phoenix and the 6th of December at the Phoenix in the afternoons. It's not been put online yet because we're... There's something else is going on the 15th and we can't decide whether to go on first or second. It's literally that tedious. That's what we're coming for. Come along to them, say hello, and that's it really. That's all I've got going on.
Alright, well, myself and Marek Larwood will be back next week, but in the meantime, keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.